travelers, and welcome to Go See, Do, Explore.
Here, we dive deep into the heart of travel, sharing hidden gems, unforgettable experiences, and the stories that make each destination unique.
Whether you're a seasoned traveler or dreaming of your next getaway, you're in the right place to get inspired.
I'm Christopher.
And I'm Ashley.
And together, we'll set the course for your next great adventure and discover the stories that make each place unforgettable.
It's time to go, see, and do more. Let's explore.
You might notice some background noise on this episode, and it's not because we decided to downgrade our setup or anything like that. Quite the opposite, in fact. We are sitting here on the California Zephyr in a roomette in these little tiny rooms. We're traveling across the country right now. We'll have all kinds of things to say about that in a future episode. But right now we're just enjoying train travel, and we thought you might like to hear what we're hearing, which is a little bit of the rumbling and a little bit of the horn and the bells and all of the noises of traveling across the United States on a long-haul train route. So that is where we are and what's going on and what you're hearing in the background. But today, I'm going to kick this over to Ashley to introduce our topic and the format for today's conversation. Go ahead.
So our episode today is Top 10 Places We Want to Return. So obviously this is not Top 10 Places, period. We haven't been everywhere. So this is just us talking about the places that we've been and the places that we would like to return to. I kind of got the idea for this. I've mentioned before that I'm a Disney adult. So there is a podcast I enjoy called WDW Radio, which is probably one of the biggest, most popular Disney podcasts. And the host, Lou Mangiello, has a popular segment called The Top Tens, where he brings on someone and together they create a top 10 list of X, Y, or Z. We each came up with, I think, 5+ places that we would like to return so that hopefully it will end up as a top 10 or so. We have not talked about the items on our list in advance, so it's possible that it might just be 5. If we completely agree.
I listed like 17 places in my list, so I've got backups on backups. No problem.
This is, of course, not exhaustive. This is our opinion of all the places that we have been, where are our top 10 that we would like to return.
Thank you for your patience. We're calling in 7:30 dinner reservations to the dining car. 7:30 dinner reservations to the dining car. Please wait at the door to be seated by member of staff and bring your reservations.
I'm going to kick it over to Chris for the first item on his list.
Oh, okay. Well, this is probably not a surprising one for you, but I chose as my top place to return Maine, and specifically Mount Desert Island. And the reason why is a little bit of more of a personal reason why. It's beautiful there. I love that park. But we went there in 2019, and it was, you know, I felt like I didn't really get enough time to do everything I wanted to do. And basically since then, I've been angling to go back. There are more trails I want to hike. There are more things I want to see. And it's of course, just, you know, for you, it's a really beautiful park. It's, you know, there's lots to see, and there's the ocean, and there's hiking trails, and there's little towns if you like that. But for me, it's also, I feel like it's a bit of a completionist thing that I didn't get to spend all the time I wanted to. And so I want to go back there, and I want to hike, and I want to, I think mainly hike. That's the thing I want to do, mainly.
In with
Maine. Mainly.
I know I've talked before, this one didn't make it onto my list, mainly because I knew it was going to be on your list.
Yeah, she knew.
But I would really love, now that we have our kayaks, to take them to Maine, explore the quote-unquote ponds.
Yeah, they're lakes, but they call them ponds.
And kind of explore that side of the park in a way that we haven't.
Yeah, that would be fun. And that's, I neglected to mention that, but that would be a good thing to do too. Yeah.
So the first place on my list, and I'm curious if this was on your list.
I'm sure.
Or if it's where it is on your list of 50 places or whatever when we're doing a top 10. But the first thing that came, the first place that came to my mind when we came up with this topic was the Black Hills of South Dakota.
Oh, good one. Not on my list.
Interesting.
I think I just didn't think about it. But yeah, totally.
So we, you know, back in 2022, we spent a week there, and I feel like we barely scratched the surface. We did, you know, the major things. We visited Custer State Park. We saw Jewel Cave and Wind Cave.
Mount Rushmore.
Mount Rushmore, of course. But I still feel like there's so much more to see. And even at Custer, I would love to dig deeper into Custer State Park and the Badlands. You know, we did a quick drive through the Badlands. We went to Waldrug, of course, which I know it's a tourist trap, but I had built it up to be so much worse than it actually was in my head, and I enjoyed Waldrug. So the Black Hills, and maybe specifically I would like to camp at Custer State Park. To be in the park, to not have to drive in, would be really good.
Yeah, that's a really good one, and I think when we visited the Black Hills, it was completely different than I was expecting. I was thinking it was going to be, I think, more like the Badlands. I was picturing kind of an arid landscape. And no, it's so green there and lush. And yeah, I completely agree. And I'm kind of sad that I forgot about that one in my list of 17 places. No, that's a good one. Okay. This one I think is going to surprise you. Although when you think about it, it won't. My second place to return to is Traverse City, Michigan. It's not a difficult destination for us like some of these other ones. We can drive there in less than 5 hours. But it's on my list because it's one of my favorite places, and I pretty much always want to go back there. Pretty much when I'm not there, I kind of wish I was there part of the time. When I was thinking about this from a practical perspective, and we're planning the places we're going to go this year and this summer, we're probably going to go back to Traverse City because we want to go back there, and we can. So that's why it's second on my list. We talked about it a little bit in the Michigan Bucket List episode, so I don't necessarily need to rehash too much of that. You can just go back and listen to that episode. But I really love the natural beauty, the lake, the wineries. There's so many good wineries there. And it's a place that always feels like home to me. And so I always kind of wish I was there sometimes.
Yeah, obviously, I love Traverse City. It didn't make it onto my list, just because, I don't know, I feel like we've been there so often.
Yeah.
And obviously, I know maybe...
Whoa, that was train.
Maybe because I know that we're going to get back there. I don't know. Like, it didn't feel as out of reach to me. But like you mentioned, all those things, there's the bay, which, you know, for me, it comes back to water a lot. And the food in Traverse City is amazing. And yeah.
Yeah. The prompt, though, is not places you really want to return to that are difficult to get to, right? It's places you want to go back to. That's why that one's so high on my list.
I feel like the second one on my list might surprise you a little, because it's not really one that I've been talking about much lately, but for me, it's Washington, D.C.
Oh, that is a surprise.
So, we went to D.C., gosh, we were still in college.
Yeah.
For one day, we saw the sights on the National Mall. We stayed with, like, family of friends in Virginia, took the train in for the day, and then took the train out. And so I kind of, you know, when I say that I feel like we've only scratched the surface, I feel like D.C. is one of those places where it's like we've barely even scratched the surface. There are so many museums in the Smithsonian, and, you know, we just watched the Somebody Feed Phil episode in Washington,
that's
D.C.
On your mind.
And all the delicious food from, you know, all the different cultures that come to D.C. There's so many different foods in D.C. from people who have come to D.C. from all over the world. I feel like the number one reason why I really want to go back is I really want to see the cherry blossoms.
Oh, right.
And, you know, when we're recording this, they're at their peak right now, and the National Park Service has been sending pictures out, and it just looks amazing. And, so I feel like not only do I want to go back to D.C., I want to go back to D.C. at, like, a very specific time.
Yeah. Those are good reasons. Yeah, that was nowhere near my list. I have been there twice. I went there and had a day very much like the day you and I had, though, where it was just kind of run around, do what you can in a day. Spending more time there would be good. All right, my next one, I wonder if this is on your list. I think it might be, but I don't know. My next one is Valle de Guadalupe in Mexico. This is a wine region, surprise, surprise. This is a wine region in Baja California near Ensenada, so just maybe an hour's drive outside of Tijuana. We went there last year as a part of a cruise, honestly. We went there from Ensenada. Ensenada was the port, and took buses into this wine region. And it makes total sense that it's a wine region because it's not that far from the very famous wine regions in California. It's far from Napa and Sonoma, but it's not all that far from the ones in the San Diego area, like Temecula. It's kind of hidden, though. It's one that I think some people know about, but a lot of people don't know about. And we found it to be just delightful. Like, the scenery was amazing. The wine was really good. They have the olive trees that they harvest the olives from. They use the olive trees as windbreaks, but then they get olives too. And so everything was really incredible, really nice. And it was a really, you know, I want to be careful not to talk about how cheap it is, because there's some sort of economic factors to be considered there. We've talked about some of that when we talked about cruising. But you can do a lot of good economically with your money if you go there. You can have an impact by patronizing these wineries and buying their wine and buying their olives and staying in their Airbnbs and all that. It's kind of an elusive destination for us because it's a little hard to get to. Tijuana doesn't have any flights to the U.S., so you pretty much have to get across on land, or you have to connect through somewhere like Mexico City or Cancun. So I've got an elaborate plan of flying to San Diego, walking across the border. If you're not familiar with that, there is a foot crossing. I'm not talking about like sneaking across the border.
You can go through the fence.
You can cross on foot there, and then you can rent a car in Tijuana and drive. That seems to be the best way to go from Detroit. So I really want to do that. I want to go back there.
Yeah, this one actually didn't make my list. I'm actually very surprised that
we're doing good. We're doing good.
The fifth, is this number five?
We haven't had a single.
And we haven't had a single overlap yet. We were actually just talking with some family about the Valle de Guadalupe and how people in the U.S. anyway don't think of Mexico for wine. And it's not because of quality, it's because of quantity, right? The wine that they make stays in Mexico for the most part. You can find it in the U.S. in some places, but it's not easy. It's not like wine from Italy or France or Spain or, you know, Greece even. I think it's easier to find in the U.S. than wines from Mexico.
Right. And it makes total sense. Wherever you see missionaries from Europe going, you see wine production, because they had it for the sacraments. And so that was the history of Mexico, was just like in California, actually, that this was, you know, this came in this case from Spain, that these Spanish travelers brought viticulture to the New World. Oh, speaking of wine, it's time for a wine break. So we're going to do that. Did bring some wine on the train with us. You're allowed to if you have a sleeper car. You just have to have it in your little closet in secret. But no, they don't want it out and about in public areas, obviously, for obvious reasons. We have a Malbec, but it is not an Argentinian Malbec, like you might assume. It is rather from Texas. So I wanted to talk a little bit about Texas wine. This Malbec, I should say, is from William Criss. William Criss is one of the most important and significant winemaking operations in Texas. It's two guys, William and Criss, and so they named their vineyard and their winery William Criss. But they are big time advocates for Texas wine, and they do a lot of lobbying and other advocating to build up that industry. We discovered Texas wine in 2019, I think, and saw what an industry it is. You know, it's one of those ones that I think if you don't know about it, you don't know about it. But they have a lot of grape production in Texas and have for a long time. Production of wine grapes and wine is a little bit of a newer effort there. But it's been going on for a number of decades now. And we find Texas wine to be very interesting and unique, and we really like it. This is a 2018 Malbec. I bought this, I think, around this time in 2021, so I've been sitting on it for, 3 years now? And it held up really well. It's a good train wine. What do you think?
William Curse, we should mention that's in the Texas Hill Country. I think it's the town of High, Texas. They've got a beautiful property with picnic tables. You can get a glass, get a bottle, hang out, play horseshoes or whatever. Yeah. Like, there's, it's just one of those places that's kind of meant to, like, hang out and drink wine. I think they have live music.
They're having a big party for the eclipse in a couple weeks.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, that would be a good place to see it.
Yeah, it's one of our favorites in Texas, and their wine is always very, very good. Very high quality.
Yeah. One thing I will say about our experience in Texas that can be kind of mixed is it seems like sometimes they charge kind of a lot. Like, if you go to Napa, it's obviously very expensive, but it's Napa. It has the really high demand
and the reputation.
The reputation. Texas sometimes feels like it can be just as much without that reputation. And so you want to be careful, but I will say, to bring this back around to William Chris, William Chris is not a place where I feel like they overcharge. Their wine is not inexpensive, but it's really high quality, and it's from Texas. They're very big. This is one of their big things, is that 100% of their grapes are from Texas. They don't, I think, legally, what is it, 80% typically has to be? Or,
I think that may have changed, but the first time we went there,
right,
they told us that. I think their lobbying may have actually been successful.
And this is usually, when new wine regions kind of start up, usually, well, we need to make sure at least 60% is from this place, and then we'll supplement it with grapes from California or wherever. And it's a natural progression that Texas would get more exclusive as their production ramps up. But it's a wine region that you should check out if you're not familiar with it. A lot of Spanish and Iberian varietals, like Tempranillo is really big there, Albariño is really big there, because it's hot. It's hotter than France. They had tried to grow Bordeaux varietals and didn't have a lot of success because it's just too hot. There is some of that now, but in any case, yeah, it's, if you're looking for something different, I would definitely recommend checking out Texas. What is your number three place to go back to?
St. Martin.
Oh, another one not on my list.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I'm really surprised.
Such a
here.
Surprise. I mean, that's a great one, though. Tell the people why.
So, we took a Southern Caribbean cruise a few years ago now, and it had a port every single day, and they were all new Caribbean ports to us, and we fell in love with so many of them, so honestly, it was hard to choose one, and I might get to another one a little later on if there's room.
We'll see.
But St. Martin is the smallest island that is divided into two different countries. Half of it is Dutch, the other half is French. We didn't really spend a lot of time in the Dutch side. It was kind of, that's where the ship docked, and we, you know, got a car and we started to drive around. And I felt like the Dutch side was very much like a lot of the other Caribbean ports that we've been to on cruises. The French side was like a little slice of Europe in the middle of the Caribbean.
We've never been to the Côte d'Azur, but it seemed like that was kind of what they were playing at.
Right. We went to an old fort that we kind of climbed. There's beautiful beaches. What was the name of the town that we had lunch?
Grand Cas.
Ah, yes. We went to a restaurant called Nice SXM, which SXM is the airport code for St. Martin, and it's kind of like what they call the island. And I have to say, it's probably one of my all-time favorite dining experiences.
It's where you discovered that you like pesto.
Yes, it's where I discovered that I like pesto, because I don't know.
Life has been different since you discovered that.
It hasn't really come up, but I was a very picky eater as a child, and I've been like slowly introducing myself to new foods, and pesto is amazing.
We had some today.
The pesto there may have topped the pesto in St. Martin, but
spoiler alert.
But having pesto sitting on the deck with a glass of French rosé and looking out at the ocean was just an amazing, amazing experience. And it's one of those places that we've watched flight prices and it just hasn't been really reasonable to return to. But it's one of those places that, you know, when you get really sick of the cold Michigan winter, it's like, oh, I really wish I was sitting out on drinking that French wine and staring at the ocean.
I think Norse might fly there. But yeah, no, that's a meal that I return to in my own mind sometimes too. I mean, the other part of it too, all that, like, I definitely agree with. Also, we had this delightful little French waiter, this little old man, who, I mean, in true, like, Niçoise style, came out with his little chalkboard and showed us, like, what he would cook for us. And, like, we've never been to Nice, we've never been to the Côte d'Azur, but that's what we've been told, and that's what we've seen, is, like, the chalkboard is very much a thing.
That's what Big Steve says. Oh, the best meals are handwritten on a chalkboard.
Yeah, right.
We had that experience in St. Martin.
That was a good one. I want to go back there, too. Good thing we don't only have to pick 10, right?
What's next on your list?
Okay. I don't know if this is going to surprise you or not. I think probably not. Toledo in Spain. Not Toledo, Ohio. To be clear.
That's funny, because I jokingly asked you if Toledo was going to be on your list.
I spent a lot of time in Toledo. John Denver says I spent a week there one day.
But that's not the Toledo you're talking
about. That song's not very nice. Yeah, no.
It's not nice to the people of Toledo.
Toledo, about a 45-minute train ride from Madrid. A really popular day trip from Madrid. But we spent a couple of nights there this past summer. And I absolutely fell in love with it for a couple of reasons. First of all, living in this new world country that we live in, we don't have anything that old.
No.
That's, like, still in use and practical, right? I mean, there are ruins and things like that.
But I even feel like some of the ruins are not as old as that city.
Yeah, I know. I mean, totally. So there's that aspect of it, right? I don't want to belittle it by saying you feel like you're in a theme park, but that's almost kind of the...
Oh, I mean, one of my first thoughts, especially when we were walking around at night... We walked through this, like, brick archway, and I was like, oh my goodness, we're in the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Right.
Of course, there weren't pirates, there wasn't a boat ride, no cheesy music, but it was just the feeling it gave off.
Right, and it's important, and I know this is what you mean too, but you see that, like, oh, these things that we have here that are, like, these commercial things are sort of shadows of a more real and a deeper... reality that still exists and you can still visit, and maybe even at a fraction of the cost if you're talking about Disney.
I think it's cheaper
it's cheaper to go to Toledo, Spain than it is to go to Orlando, Florida for Disney. That's absolutely true. So that was one aspect. But the other thing I really loved about it was a very accessible city. The people were very friendly, and it was one of those places where kind of the tourists would come for the day and leave, and when you stayed there, it was this really special experience. And I thought the restaurants were all really fun, and it's a place that I wish that I could spend a lot more time in, because I really fell in love with it. It was really hot in the middle of the day, but we were able to arrange our days so that basically we went out in the morning and we went out at night, and that was kind of perfect for that town. The Spanish eat very late, so it's all good. You can do that, you can walk around and just feel like you're somewhere where things have happened, you know. I don't want to go on and on about it, but that's definitely a place that I think about going back to.
I tell the story of the huevos rotos being served in the cocktail shaker all the time.
Yeah, we were having huevos rotos, which is it means broken eggs in Spanish. And so what they do is they sort of cook eggs from the heat of potatoes, is how that works. But this particular restaurant, they had put it in a cocktail shaker, and he came by and asked us if anyone had ordered a cocktail, and we said no. And then he dumped the contents out into a plate, and it was the huevos rotos. Yeah.
But it was a really funny moment where we were both a little confused.
We were. And he was speaking in English, too. It wasn't a language issue. It was just, yeah. It was fun, though. Every meal was great. Everything there was great. I love. What's next for you?
So I've got to decide if I want to go with one that's probably going to be the last one on your list. Do I want to take that gamble? Or should I just say it now?
Just do whatever you were going to do. I mean, don't overthink it. That's the whole point of this,
It's just crazy to me that we haven't overlapped a single one yet. And, like, my mind is blown with that.
I think the next two on my list are probably two that you'll have, so.
Okay, so I'm going to say the Azores. Seriously?
How did I forget that one? I've been talking about it. Okay, that should be on my list. That was just an oversight. I haven't been able to shut up about the Azores for a year. Not a year, but for almost a year. So that should have been probably, like, number two, in all honesty.
That's why I was super surprised it hasn't come up yet. But I was like, well, I don't want to talk about it if you're saving it for last.
Please, you talk about the Azores.
We briefly mentioned the Azores in our cruising episode. But they are a series of islands smack dab in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean that, for, I guess, by luck, are Portuguese.
Yeah. The Portuguese found them. There were no indigenous people living on those islands when the Portuguese got there. So it wasn't like a colonization kind of a situation. It was just like they were empty rocks.
Right. And they took it over as essentially a stopover on transatlantic voyages. And we visited for one day on a cruise, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
I said on our cruise episode, I think it was my absolute favorite shore excursion that we've ever taken. So we got a tour of half of the island, essentially. I don't think we even saw the other half, but we went to a tea plantation, and we got Azorean tea. We went to a hot springs area, and we saw how the Azorean people cook their food in the ground, geothermally, essentially. And our guide, who was wonderful, made us a reservation to have lunch, where we have this typical Azorean meal that I could try to name, but I'm sure I would absolutely butcher the Portuguese. But it's basically the typical Azorean meal, I think is what it's called, isn't it? If you try,
wasn't it like cozida?
It was this very unique kind of stew that's not, I don't know, it's not wet. It's hard to describe.
I think stew gets at it. There's not a lot of broth or anything like that, but it's like, you know what it reminded me of a little bit is like if you make foil packets and you put in like some meat and like a whole bunch of vegetables. That was kind of what this was. There was some meat, there were some sausages, there were a whole lot of vegetables, and it had been put into, you know, these pots that they seal up and then they put under the ground next to geysers and hot springs and stuff.
And it cooks for like 12 hours.
Something like
our guide said, it's mostly winter food for the local
people.
Yeah,
it's very heavy food.
But it was just such an amazing experience, and we got to walk around the town of Furnas, which is obviously like spelled like furnace, so it's named after the geothermal activity in the area.
Thanks for that water.
But yeah, oh yeah, they had the mineral springs.
I kind of liked it.
It was, I don't know, it was weirdly bubbly and tasted like rust. It was,
yeah.
I'm not a bubbly water person.
Dissolved minerals, so it had an effervescent quality to it.
But yeah, it was a crazy, crazy place, and we only had, you know, 12 hours or so to see it. And I know that there's a whole other half of the island, not to mention the other islands that we didn't even consider.
Yeah.
And it seems like one of those places that most people haven't discovered. Kind of like what you were saying with Toledo. Like, it's, I don't know, it's not, you know, Myrtle Beach.
Yeah. People go there, but it's not, like, a headlining destination. And maybe it'll stay that way and we can just keep going there.
Yeah.
Surprise, though, you didn't even mention Azorean wine.
Oh, yeah.
Another.
I was so busy thinking about the food.
Yeah. Also, it's beautiful there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and hiking. And I think I mentioned on the cruise episode that there is Lago de Fogo is one of the big destinations in the Azores. And somebody that was on our tour said that they wanted to do this tour because it was one of those photos that came up on the, like, Windows screensaver or, like, lock screen or whatever. And she just said that she really wanted to see it. And it was breathtaking, and unlike, you know, when we think about those places in the U.S., like, you go to Yellowstone and there's, like, everyone else is around you, we had the Azores to ourselves.
Yeah.
Azorean wine is crazy, too, because it's grown on volcanic soil near the ocean, so it's just very, very unlike anything else.
Yeah, I think we saw people have Azorean wine on a TV show before we went, and they were all going on and on about how this wine sort of tastes salty, like it tastes like the ocean, and I was highly skeptical. I was like, okay, like, I mean, I understand that terroir is a thing, but I was really skeptical about it. No, it's like actually salty, like for real. I'm not even gonna wax poetical about it, but in a very interesting and unique and delicious way. Yeah, Azores, another good one.
I'm so shocked it wasn't on you.
Yeah, they it should have been. They grow pineapple? Like, it's not that hot there.
Yeah, they grow pineapple and bananas.
I don't really understand how that works.
I feel like the average high temperature in the summer there is in the 60s. I don't know how that works.
It's just so consistently warm and humid, I think, that they can get away with plants that are typically more tropical.
And I think their bananas don't grow very big.
Right. That should have been on my list, but I'm glad that I forgot it, because that means that you got to talk about it. All right, my last one. This, surprising that it's down this far, but my last one, definitely worth mentioning, is Puerto Rico. I'm sure not a surprise.
No, not a surprise. I feel like the only reason it didn't make my list is that in 2 years we've been there 3 times.
Yeah.
I think there are other places that are higher for me.
See, I didn't do it like that. I just did it based on the place I want to go back to. Without consideration for... But I basically want to live there. I mean...
He looks at real estate kind of a lot.
All the time. It's... You know, I hate to keep going on at every single one of these places that are naturally beautiful or whatever, but it obviously is. It's really incredible, and it's got the ocean and all that. But I also really love the culture and the people, and it's just a place that... Maybe this is, like, overly subjective in terms of evaluating a destination, but for me it's one of those places that I often find myself very happy while I'm there for a lot of reasons. And, yeah, I mean, we could talk about the food, we could talk about the kiosks, we could talk about the nature, we could talk about the old, old buildings and history in San Juan, and we could talk about also the struggles that that island has had in finding its identity kind of in the sort of no man's land of being a U.S. Commonwealth and all the challenges that that has caused for them too, and how we can contribute economically there too to improve their situation. But for all those reasons, it's one of those places I think about all the time and basically look at flights for constantly and real estate too.
Well, you know, when I was talking about St. Martin and being like Europe in the middle of the Caribbean, Old San Juan is 100% Europe in the middle of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And it's probably one of my favorite cities. I will definitely say that.
Yeah.
We've spent kind of a lot of time there now, and I love the whole island, but if I had to pick one place, I think it would be Old San Juan.
Yeah, Old San Juan, I think, is one of the greatest places to visit there. I don't think I would want to live in that chaos.
Oh, definitely not with the cruise ships.
Especially with the cruise ships.
If you could live there only on days when there weren't cruise ships.
Fajardo, I think about a lot. We'll do a Puerto Rico episode sometime, and we have a lot to talk about there. Fajardo, Ponce, these are places that I think about, too.
So.
Last one? It's probably my next one. I'm going to guess that your last one is my next one. We'll see.
I can't decide between two.
Yeah, you have to decide.
No.
This is your rules.
My next one is going to be the Douro Valley in Portugal.
Okay.
Was that where you thought I was going?
So my next one is Porto. So we're close. We're close.
Yeah. It was one of those places we took a day trip, and just absolutely beautiful. The people, like you said, in Puerto Rico, the people in Portugal are so friendly. I was just thinking, you know, we could take, you know, go to Porto, take the train into the Douro Valley, and really kind of spend some time there would be...
Yeah, that train looked really cool. We took a tour, which we've mentioned already. On a previous episode, we talked about that tour a little bit. So we were in a van, but there is a train that goes from São Bento Station in Porto all the way out to the Douro and has views of the river basically the whole way. If you're on the right side of the train going out, that's important. You want to be on the right side of the train going out, on the left side of the train coming back. You have amazing views of the Douro Valley. That's what we want to go back and do. And it's, you know, it's a European train, so I think it probably costs, I don't know, certainly less than 50 euros. I don't remember how much, but it's not a lot.
Much less than this train we're currently on.
Much less than this train we're currently on.
Portugal in general is just a wonderful, wonderful country, and there's so much more to explore. But of all the places that we've been, I feel like the Douro is up there for me.
Yeah, we had a good day there, too. It wasn't super hot. It can get really hot there.
That's true. They did tell us at one of the wineries that the Douro Valley is known to have two seasons, and those two seasons are winter and hell.
Yeah.
We happened to be there between those two seasons.
Yeah, we lucked out. Should we just rapid fire this list really quick to restate it? Let's do it. So I'll say mine, you say yours.
Okay.
Ready? Okay. Mount Desert Island, Maine.
Black Hills, South Dakota.
Traverse City, Michigan.
Washington, D.C.
Valle de Guadalupe, Mexico.
St. Martin.
Toledo, Spain.
Azores, Portugal.
Puerto Rico.
The Douro Valley, Portugal.
I'll save some of these other destinations I have for another time.
Okay.
I mean, there are so many that I can't pick. So I hope that this sparks some interest for you, that you found some destinations here maybe that you haven't heard of or haven't been to that you should check out now. And yeah, it was fun to reminisce a little bit. And I'm honestly surprised that we had so little overlap. You mentioned a couple though that I honestly just forgot to mention. It worked out well.
Yeah, but I still have more.
I mean, I have part two. We can do a part two.
Part two.
We'll do a part
top
two.
Top 20.
Yeah, another time. We can do the next round. I still have the list.
Come on. Let's ride this train. Come on.
For our final segment today, we have a travel book recommendation, I'll say. And it seems like we're talking about wine a lot tonight. I don't know. I don't know if that's always a theme of this podcast. We love traveling that involves wine because it's one of those things, at least for me, I feel like it's one of those things that binds places and cultures together. And it's really delicious and a lot of fun. But why don't you share the book we were talking about?
So my book recommendation is called Wine Trails of the U.S. and Canada. It is a Lonely Planet guidebook, and it has really helped us when we are doing wine travel to find good wineries. Like, the book has never steered us wrong. There have been a few instances where we have been traveling and we've booked a winery that wasn't mentioned in the book, and it was not good, yet the ones the book steered us towards have always been fabulous. Obviously, the one big caveat with this is that they do not mention Michigan, and there is a U.S.-Canada map that has, like, dots of the wine regions, and it has a dot on Old Mission that says Lake Michigan Shore.
Yeah, so that's the wrong AVA.
So I think that is, you know, in Chris's mind, that is a point off of the book. I guess since we don't need a guidebook for Michigan wineries, it doesn't hurt us.
No, we could produce a guidebook on Michigan wineries, honestly.
We should.
Maybe we should do that.
But anyway, it is called The Wine Trails of the U.S. and Canada, and it is a Lonely Planet guide. There is also a Europe guide, which I have but have not used because the wine traveling that we did in Europe was with a guide. So we didn't need it, but maybe soon we will use some of its recommendations and I can come back and tell you if it's as good as the American version.
Yeah, great. So if you're interested in wine tourism like we are, check it out.
That's all for today's episode of Go, See, Do, Explore. Thank you for joining us and sharing in the wonder of travel.
Keep the spirit of today's adventure alive by checking out our blog at goseedoexplore.com for even more travel inspiration.
Don't forget to rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts. It really helps fellow travelers find us and join our community.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep dreaming, and keep traveling by any means necessary.
I'm Christopher.
And I'm Ashley, bidding you farewell and happy exploring.